Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Broadcast week begins anew. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room, for instance, which is a lively, rollicking place where we have the real-time experience that serves as an adjunct to the live program between now and 10 p.m. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. You can jump in. News Ninja Carol Baker, both incarnations, Man Cave and Sparky Dunk, are in the room, as is M. Brandt. Good evening, everyone. More folks will be wandering by in short order, I trust. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, handy-dandy Listen Live button. And you'll also find access to the archives, podcasting, that kind of thing, right there on the main page. And then there's the Contribute tab. The Contribute tab is how we keep all of this going. We try to raise $150 a night, which works out to be about $750 a week as part of a $3,000-ish dollar amount we try to raise every month to keep everything paid and wolves away from doors and packets passing and electrons electrolyzing and exactly. Yeah. So hopefully there will be we'll take care of that. The fundraising easily this evening. And I want to send out thanks early on to Ed and Bill for helping us get started on fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. For those of you who prefer the United States Postal Service method, and there are a number of you, thanks to folks like Irish Dave and Tom in the Bay Area and our buddy Faith, that's a possibility as well, the address being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. With a gentle reminder that checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should instead be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications or something like that, because Bob Kincaid never sees those mailings. Boss Man Wayne attends to those issues. Okay, so that takes care of the usual housekeeping that attends the beginning of any program and the broadcast week as well. Which means that we now must acknowledge that, yes, at the beginning of a broadcast week, this 19th day of January, 2015, that it is, in fact, yeah, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. And I kind of, I'm ashamed of myself for this, but I all weekend long, I kind of dreaded the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Because I knew. I did not suspect. I did not theorize. I did not fear or have a creeping sense of. I knew that this day, like its fellows every year, would bring out a flood tide of absolute jackassery from the Morans. I knew, in point of fact, that that we would find this evening the absolute distilled essence of Moranity, because this holiday drives white wingers, of whom there are many, 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 absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach. And you know what? It's true. Oh, yeah. We could start, for instance, with the Klan. Uh-huh. The Klan decided to get with the 21st century and celebrate the birthday holiday of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. And they marked the holiday, they observed the holiday, by scattering KKK flyers around the Manchester neighborhood of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this morning. Yes, they really did. They claimed to be issued under the aegis of the Loyal White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. And I guess that sort of makes you wonder, does that mean there's a disloyal Black Knights of the Ku Klux Klan? Maybe I'm just caught up in some sort of false duality. Who knows? Martin Luther King Day, and they passed out flyers bearing what? Yes, Dr. King's mugshot from when he was arrested in an act of civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. Apparently the Klan is trying to organize in western Pennsylvania. Oh, pardon me. Been sneezing like crazy for about a week, and I just knew that you didn't need to be subjected to that. Meanwhile, out in Colorado Springs, far, far away from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I haven't seen coverage, I don't know if they did, but a group of citizens announced, American citizens, announced that they would protest the NAACP today. Margarita Stokes called for a rally. She said, "We are a group of concerned citizens who have been wanting to do something and decided this is the day to do it." She said the protest is a rallying cry for the organization to get more involved in social justice. And she also said that the recent bombing of the Colorado Springs NAACP office was a big distraction. Well, I guess you could call a bombing a distraction, an attempt to murder people inside the building a distraction. Meanwhile, I saw from some apparently right-wing website a post claiming the Colorado Springs NAACP bombing was clearly a hoax. Right. This is how the White Wing marks the anniversary of Dr. King's birth. I'll be dipped, Carol Baker, News Ninja U. I was wondering about that, and well, there's this telepathic thing. So Carol just told me American Sniper. We'll be talking about American Sniper. American Sniper made 9 times the money Selma did at the box office. Carol noting which speaks volumes about American values, since one school... Yes. And I got that, too. Right. Oh, American sniper. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. But wait, wait. The Barker is sitting there on the midway. And we haven't given him his due.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, that's right. You hear the music of the Calliope, you come a-running. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your feet moving on the street. Come on by the Moran Monday tent at the Horn. It is, in fact, Moran Monday on the Horn. And here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear Morans of all varieties. Right-wing Morans, racist Morans, birther Morans, deather Morans, tenther Morans, truther Morans, booger-eating Morans, bircher Morans, libertarian Morans, repig-licking Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, for less than about 5 cents per hour of programming, ladies and gentlemen, you too can experience the wonder that is Moran Monday on the Horn. Advice to people entering the Moran Monday tent, be they male or female, young or old, tall or small, keep all packages, children, loved ones, puppies, kitties, anything, keep it close at hand and in your hands, as the Morans, being right-wingers and repiglicans, can get grabby. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes, you will. You truly, truly will. Let's start with Republican white wing America's favorite man of color, of course. Yeah, how about you, Dr. Ben Carson? Brother. No, you just know this is going to be a blast. So, Dr. Ben Carson, who fancies himself a presidential hopeful, he showed up on C-SPAN's Washington Journal. To talk about, of all things, something he knows nothing about. But knowing nothing about something is apparently not an impediment to Dr. Ben Carson. I wouldn't let the man get near me with a Band-Aid. It's no impediment, not knowing about something, for Dr. Ben Carson to opine and bloviate and pontificate and fulminate away. Take it away, Dr. Ben.
We'll go to Mark in Pennsylvania, our line for Republicans. Mark, good morning.
Yes, Dr. Carlson. I had been saw you on Fox, and I often tell people that you should have been the first black president. You're very intelligent. You're analytic. You weigh things out. You think before you speak. You know a lot, and you embody what MLK one.
Oh, holy crap, I almost forgot. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. I feel better now. Give you just a couple of seconds to reach over, grab it, get a good bite in it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
On it for the black community.
Dr. Carson, I'm a cranky old white man from Pennsylvania, and I just wanted you to know that you're a Negro I can like.
Thank you.
I'm a little nervous, but if you run for president, I'll spread the word for people to vote for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know.
Oh, God, really, get the hockey puck.
No, it's. I find it amusing sometimes when people say there probably won't be another black president in our lifetimes because of all the things that have happened under the first one. But my answer to that is, isn't he half white? So it means we're not going to have another white president either? That's kind of a stupid argument.
Well, that's okay. You're kind of a stupid man, Ben Carson. Further proof that just because you have talent in one area, and apparently he is a noted neurosurgeon who should go back to neurosurgery, but just because you develop talent in one area does not mean that you are talented to do another. Not everything transfers. Well, I just want to remind you that Barack Obama is half white. He didn't quite get around to saying, oh, I'll be the first all-black president. No. Oh, what else? This was really my favorite. A convicted felon and God-fearing, upstanding right-winger Dinesh D'Souza. Remember, Dinesh D'Souza is a convicted felon because he tried to because he flagrantly, willfully violated the election laws of this country. And he's serving out some time in what's being called a community confinement center instead of prison. Because, well, we just can't be sending the darlings of the right wing off to the old gray bar hotel and giving them their tin cup that they can zing back and forth across the bars hollering, "You dirty screws!" So, Dinesh, who has been seen all over the place and apparently doesn't have to spend that much time at the community confinement center, is apparently allowed to have access to the interweb tubes while he is being confined in a community. And, naturally, this being the national holiday in memory of the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Dinesh D'Souza took to the Twitters to share the following. "I hesitate to point this out," Dinesh D'Souza tweets, "but I find it interesting that Martin Luther King Jr. was a lawbreaker who spent time, all caps, jail." Dr. Martin Luther King was, in fact, a lawbreaker. He broke unjust laws as a calculated act of civil disobedience. None of the laws that he broke involved trying to dummy up a political process and pour money into elections that was illegal to do. But that wasn't enough. Here's the fun part of this. That tweet at the time of publication of this story got 107 favorites and 76 retweets. Really got Dinesh D'Souza going. "We lawbreakers got to stick together." That was all in caps. I'm just not going to scream at you. "I'm excited to celebrate the life and legacy of my fellow lawbreaker and jailer, Martin Luther King Jr." Just checking here, Dinesh, old buddy. None of the crimes for which Dr. King was charged, none of those were felonies, now, were they? and none of them were crimes of moral turpitude like you committed. And, of course, he was never the president of a Christian college who was out a-romping around. No. And then, thirdly, by the way, that tweet got 172 retweets and 224 favorites. That's kind of a lot for the Twitters. And, again, all caps, an interesting parallel. MLK was targeted by J. Edgar Hoover, an unsavory character. I was targeted by the equally unsavory B. Hussein Obama. This is how they mark the federal holiday that marks the life and worth, commemorates the life and work and worth of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Right-wingers. So, let's see. Ben Carson. To Ben Carson, Obama is only half black, and he wants everybody to remember that. While he, Ben Carson, is by far blacker than Barack Obama can ever dream of being. And Dinesh D'Souza wants people to think that Barack Obama is same-same with J. Edgar Hoover. As Carol notes today, conservatives praise King's I Have a Dream speech. Tomorrow, they'll resume their ceaseless efforts to make sure it stays a dream. And, of course, today is the day that the white folks talk about the only remark that they can ever remember Dr. King making, or that they're aware of him ever having made. That a man should be judged on the not on the color of his skin, but on the content of his character. That's it. That's all they got. Moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Sorry, they ain't no justice in the right wing universe gonna be arcing. No. So there's poor Dinesh D'Souza, getting busted for a felony of trying to rig an election is exactly. It's a moral one-to-one comparison with violating the law in order to create pressure on a government to end vicious racial discrimination. And, of course, Dinesh D'Souza has never known a moment's discrimination. He has in fact, been well compensated for his right-wingery and his hate. Charming, no. More on Monday, baby. Let's see. Let's go to the mailbag real quick. Notes coming in. Ron and Raleigh. Remember, Bob, Virginia has MLK Day only on the condition that they could have Lee Jackson Day on the preceding weekend. Yes, that Lee. Old Marse Bobby Lee. A traitor to the United States of America. Ron's not kidding. That's real. They celebrate the life of a man who committed treason against the United States of America. And that was their condition for being for having to celebrate, you know, one of those people's lives. Not kidding. (sighs) And then a little something that Carol alluded to a few minutes earlier, because it's more in Monday, and we got a stack. Oh, brother, do we have a stack? Carol mentioned the fact that American Sniper outdrew Selma at the box office by about a factor of 9. Yeah. Well, it is only fitting. And by the way, thank you, Carol, for jumping into the fundraising fray this evening. That means we have $65 to go in tonight's fundraising. Thank you very kindly. Oh, God, I get sick of this. The old production computer is being a bit of a pain in the tuchus at the moment. Tim from L.A., he says, Bob, I have two questions for you, and I hope you can answer them. One, women make up more than 51% of the U.S. population, yet after plugging some numbers into an analytic software I'm using at school for the fun of it, there are more male than female morons. Why is that? Because morons derive from the general population group known as right-wingers. And they are, by definition, more vocal. Although, that is not to say that there are no female morons. It's just that on the right-wing side, being authoritarians, they prefer that their women stay silent. Their women. That is not a term of art. That is how they view women as property. And they like them to stay silent in church, and they like them to stay silent everywhere else, too. Question two. The moron in Colorado said that the bombing of the Colorado NAACP was a hoax. We saw the damage done to the facade, but if it's a hoax, does that mean that 9/11 was a hoax? Oh, no, we're not going there. We saw the jets going into what WTC 1 and 2, saw the building fall. Now, is that a hoax, too, or if she's a moron and does not know what the word hoax means? She's a moron. 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 Randy and PA telling me I can cure my sneezing fits with hot chicken soup and 2 tablespoons per day of elderberry syrup. Available in the 32-ounce size from drugstore.com. Is the cure for what ails you? Well, I know there's stuff that's been made out of elderberries that'll cure what ails you, or at least make you feel like you've been cured. No doubt. Thank you, Randy. Oh yeah, we're more and poor this evening. We got oodles of them. What do you say we? Well, hang on. No, I want to go to Alabama. Darn it! There he is. There he is. Yeah. Tom Baggioni with the story at rawstory.com. It is the tale of DeKalb County School Superintendent Hugh Taylor. And Hugh Taylor has canceled a planned school trip. The planned school trip was to go to the movie theater and see Selma. School superintendent and undeniably white guy, Hugh Taylor of DeKalb County, Alabama, said, uh-uh, no. He said he canceled the school trip. By the way, the school that was taking the trip is a majority minority, has a majority minority population, student base, whatever. And he canceled the trip because he was concerned that the children would be hearing some unsavory, obscene language and racial profanity. Mm-hmm. By the way, Hugh Taylor may be superintendent of the DeKalb County Schools, but he sends all of his precious children, four of them, to a private Christian academy. Yeah, really. Mr. Taylor says that he was worried. He was just worried about what might happen if a child was to hear some of the racial profanity or some of the obscene language and get up and decide they wanted to get out of that there movie theater. And I don't think teachers should be put in the position of having to play parents. Of course. Of course. Didn't sit so well with one of the seniors in the history club, or one of the seniors' parents. Reverend James Stanton said, "It raises my curiosity as to whether something that they not wanting to expose or children not to know about, I don't believe it's just the profanity." Reverend Stanton, it turns out, lived through the era. He was 20 years old in 1965. Yes. So, goodness me. Wait. You think those children haven't heard racial profanity, as he describes it? Because I'm pretty sure they have. Pretty sure they've heard it rather a lot when you get right down to it. It is, after all, Alabamistan. But remember, when you talk about race and racism in particular. Well, at least one metric suggests that my own West By Coal, Virginia stan is the most racist state in the Union. We're talking about, in this particular instance, and Kelly sent this story along. Thank you, Kelly. Talking about a little place in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, which is about as pretty a part of West Virginia as you're ever likely to see. Sits over in the radio quiet zone. Long, straight ridges with beautiful valley floors. The Greenbrier River running through it. And a little community called Hillsboro, West Virginia. Where there's one little diner. The Pretty Penny Cafe. And on the wall of the Pretty Penny Cafe on the morning of January 8th, the cafe sits there on US 219, someone had spray painted "Nigger Lover" in green spray paint on the white wall there. Mm-hmm. Why? Why? Because of an interracial couple, a dark-skinned man and a white woman who have a family, two precious little children, a little boy and a little girl. Blair Campbell is married to Charlene Campbell. And they run the Pretty Penny Cafe. She posted on Facebook, "This morning, my worst nightmare came true. I love Hillsboro so much. The Campbell family has felt nothing but love from everyone here. This community has stuck by me as I've figured out how to run my business. I am eternally grateful. This is our home. I need people to understand this hateful crime will not be overlooked. I will not turn a quiet ear like some do when they hear racist jokes or derogatory comments about women. I refuse to live in a place where people overlook wrongdoing. I need us all to stand together and show the rest of West Virginia that Pocahontas County is not some racist, ignorant place. That the few don't speak for the many. We need people to know this is a place that treasures diversity." It's also West Virginia. Only 1% of the population of Pocahontas County, West Virginia, is black. 96% is white. And 3% are Latino or mixed race. So, you know, it's just another day of freedom. But the incident, the spray painting, the attack, you know, spray paint is, that's an attack. The attack on the little business run by an interracial couple has stirred up some stuff. The story is at Salon. Mike May said, "I was born and raised in Marlinton and left at age 18 simply because of the racist, sheltered, and uneducated thought process of more than half the county. Have you forgotten about William Pierce or the National Alliance? I haven't forgotten being called nigger, coon, or half-breed hundreds of times throughout high school." And yes, William Pierce was a disgusting racist who moved the National Alliance white supremacist organization to Hillsboro back in 1978. And yes, in case you didn't get the National Alliance, they were neo-Nazis when you get right down to it. Who had 6:39 p.m.? Sarah Riley is friends with the Campbells. And she said, "We grew up in a fearful place. There are families in Greenbrier County who won't send their kids to High Rocks, which is a leadership program she runs for young women from southeastern West Virginia. There are families in Greenbrier County who won't send their kids to High Rocks because they're afraid for their safety. I had nightmares about the National Alliance. When they showed up, there was nothing we could do. We didn't want to mess with them. We were scared of their retaliation." The chef at the cafe is a man of color. He is married to a white woman named Hannah Ormsby. She said, "Our children are biracial, and I'm afraid of what the future holds for them. People look at me funny," says her daughter, Sadie, who is one of only three children of color at Hillsboro Elementary. "People look at me funny because I'm brown." Sarah Riley said, Frank's friends won't drive through here. They'll drive all the way up to White Sulphur to avoid it. A lot of memories stirred up. Heather Fox says, I'm remembering scrubbing words of hate off the playground equipment once upon a time. I hate to see that things don't change much. But then again, they don't change much because there's a lot of people in this country who don't want things to change much. Yeah. Ron and Raleigh with a question. He says, hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. Which side of the Edmund Pettus Bridge do you think the superintendent was standing on? Just asking. Yeah, the side that had the clubs and the tear gas and the yes. You know, the good old days when people knew their place, right? Sure. Oh, by the way, this is also it would have been the 72nd birthday of Janis Joplin. So that deserves to be noted, absolutely. Gone long before her time. So, what else? Hey, how about this? now, this isn't specifically related to the holiday today. Not related at all, I suppose. But again, it's, you know, it's Moranity. Inescapable. Now we have to go to go out west for this. There's been an oil spill. Well, hell, gasoline's cheap. We can afford those now, right? No, there's been an oil spill out west into, come on, this is easy, yet you can expect it, right? Into the Yellowstone River. Crews were called out and worked all through the day today trying to clean up. Trying to clean up an oil spill from a pipeline in eastern Montana. The Wall Street Journal noting that Bridger Pipeline LLC is trying to determine what caused the weekend breach. I can tell them. There was an oil spill from a pipeline into the Yellowstone River because some oil-sodden hydrocarbon jackass bastards were allowed to put a pipeline near the Yellowstone River. Next question. And just, if there happened to be, and I don't know if there are, if there happened to be any lingering, lurking right-wingers out there who... Yeah, you know, we need the Keystone XL pipeline there for the jobs. You gotta have some jobs. Jobs. J-A-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W-W- Doctor, there's some fellers probably wouldn't have been working on this here holiday had they not had a glorious patriotic hydrocarbon oil spill from the Bridger Pipeline, LLC pipeline into the Yellowstone River. See how the oil industry is creating jobs in America? It was the Bridger Poplar Pipeline, which sounds disturbingly like the front end of the old Johnny Carson Jack Webb copper clapper caper. Yes, the Bridger Poplar Pipeline near a place called Glendive, Montana. It started on Saturday morning. The leak did. See, it's just a leak. It's not a breach or a spill. It's just a leak. Drip, 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 drip. Only it drip, drip, dripped somewhere between, and they really aren't sure, because why would you want any kind of machinery or stuff that would tell you exact numbers? Because then some tree hugger would probably sue you trying to destroy America by suing the oil industry. They're not sure. Either 300 or 1,200, which even I, doing ciphering on the fly, can tell you is about a 900-gallon range. Either 300 or 1,200 barrels of crude oil. 300 to 1,200 barrels. Dumped into the Yellowstone River. And since it got into the river, it's been flowing with the river and has thus far extended 15 and 25 miles downstream from Glendive. Some of the oil is trapped under ice. Well, maybe we can, we probably need to throw some coal ash on that ice to get that ice to melt so that the oil can get moving on downstream. Here's a fun fact. Yeah, really. The story notes that the pipeline company, that's Bridger's Poplar Pipeline, they managed to shut down the dumping of this crude oil, which is probably coming from, the Bakken fields of North Dakota, maybe? Within an hour of finding out they had a leak. Man, that's fast. I mean, compare that with Freedom Industries in West Virginia and the 10,000 gallons of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol that leaked, dumped, spilled into the Elk River on January the 9th, 2014, and went on for the better part of probably something approaching a day or more. Bridger Poplar Pipeline LLC got it shut down within an hour. Impressive. Yeah, but wait. There's something that bothers me about that, saying that it was 300 to 1,200 barrels. Hold on a minute. What was he saying? Carry the... Yeah, divide and the gazettas. Wow, some bitch. Now that's a different range. Now, that's a much different number, because it's just 300 barrels, right? 300 barrels is around 16,500 gallons. 6,500 more gallons of crude oil than the methylcyclohexane methanol that was dumped into the Elk River from a corroded out storage tank. So that's the low end. The low end is 16,500 gallons. Wait a minute. Carry the four. So the real number, if we want to be real newsalicious about this, is that Bridger Poplar Pipeline LLC, a proud, God-fearing, upstanding oil company in the United States of America, dumped between in 1 hour's time. Bridger Poplar Pipeline LLC got the leak started within an hour of realizing it had begun. It apparently only takes an hour to dump something between, and it's a range, something between 16,500 and 166,000 gallons. Oh, okay, I'm using the wrong number. Dang it. Thank you, Ron, before I got too far. Now, see, they weren't nearly as bad. There I was saying it was somewhere between 16,500 gallons and 166,000 gallons, and I'm clearly wrong. Our buddy Ron letting me know that there are 42 U.S. gallons to the barrel of oil, so 300, carry the 6, Cipher, Gazetta. Oh, that's only 12,600 barrels at the low end. So between 12,600 gallons, 12,600 gallons, and carry the 9, and Gazetta, and 50,400 gallons. So, I mean, that's like almost no oil at all spilled into the Yellowstone River near Glendive, Montana. I wonder if there was any fish in it. Well, there aren't now. Hey, just light the river, set fire to the river, and let's have an al fresco fish fry. What do you say? Jesus. Fit to make a fella scream. But see, that pipeline, that didn't have oil. Man, that many thousands of gallons in an hour? That oil must just be scooting right on. I mean, there must be some serious pressure behind that oil, scooting right on through that pipeline. And, of course, remember, the volatility of Bakken crude is somewhere north of 30%, so who knows why that pipeline leaked, except for maybe it blew up. No, they'd tell us if it blew up, wouldn't they? Would they? Right. Yeah. More ends everywhere, nor any thought to think. This one inspired a little bit of a laugh on my part as well. The company is testing the water in Glendive for any contamination.
Well, see, we found some feces in there from where people had their straight pipes going from their septic systems into the river, and that is far, far more dangerous than any crude oil we may have dumped by the tens of thousands of gallons in said river.
Now, why would I say something like that? Because I hear about that. You hear that all the time around here. Well, coal companies
may pollute some water, but there's people that has their poopy pipes running into the creek too. See?
Mm-hmm. And there it is. Yes, the Poplar Pipeline moves crude from the Bakken Basin to nearby hubs. And it's not like it just runs above the ground there so you can go and check on it. No. Darn it. It's at least 8 feet below the riverbed of the Yellowstone River.
Woo-wee!
So it not only got out of the pipeline, it managed to get up. It traveled from the bottom of the river to the top of the river.
Lovely.
The Bridger Poplar Pipeline LLC, by the way, has not been inspected since 2012. Wonder how often they plan to inspect the Keystone XL pipeline. Maybe, I don't know, every 10 years or so. Oil's moving, checks are cashing. Well, that ought to be enough, right? See, there's the real concern. Tens of thousands of gallons of crude oil, that was money. That was money that Bridger Poplar Pipeline LLC is not going to get. Oh, the humanity. Yeah. Oh, we've got so many morons. So little time. But we will take our top of the hour break now, I think. Which means that the phone lines are now open. Area code 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. That's the Gizmo line. And, of course, you can always reach the program Skype to Skype as long as you and I are contacted together. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And here at the... end of the first hour of the program this evening, we are trying to raise $65 more to close out our fundraising for this evening, or $165, or $265, or hell, the week's fundraising. Wouldn't that be fun? But no, the baseline is $65. For anybody who cares to jump in alongside folks like Ed and Bill and Carol. Thank you all very much for keeping this little broadcast operation running. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Bye, 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 baby, bye-bye. Long.
one, the only, Janis Joplin, Big Brother in the Holding Company. Bye-bye, baby. It is 7 p.m. exactly, straight up. We are one-third of the way through the evening's program. Let's go straight away over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning or good evening, whatever time frame you're in.
How the heck are you, John?
just sitting in a truck stop and got to listening. And it's amazing the looting segues that occur. I was in the Dakotas a couple of days ago, and with this wonderful drop in fuel prices and gas prices, I ran into like five guys who were basically were packing up and heading home because their company that they had just gotten hired on about less than 7 months ago for gobs and gobs of money let them go with no notice and said, well, sorry guys, you know, fuel prices dropped and we can't make any money anymore. See ya.
Well, what? You mean they didn't decide to be good, upstanding corporate citizens and keep paying them and keep drilling even though it's no longer worth doing?
Oh, no. And I felt for them on a personal basis because, I mean, you hate to have your life
right. We're human beings.
But part of me was, a small, evil little part of me, there's a little devil sitting on my shoulder going, yeah, well, you bought into this thing, you know, wanting to get the, you know, get the cheap crude and all that good stuff. And then, you know, and what was really worried about it, and like I said, I do a little armchair economics in my spare time, and what's really scary is that a lot of these companies, because of the speed at which they were all trying to get in on the wildcatting and the things, they floated their companies with junk bonds. And
I wondered where the money came from.
Well, there's another podcast I was listening to. There's a guy that he's based out of Singapore, and he does a lot of the expat stuff. Basically seeing the doom and gloom of the United States, and you need to move away and all that stuff. But if you kind of stomach and kind of watch, kind of gloss over what he's talking about, he really has some fascinating information and he gave out some figures, and I don't know all off the top of my head, but he said that more than 70% of the stuff, particularly in Texas and the Dakotas, was all funded by the banking, you know, where they dumped their money when the real estate bubble collapsed. They started, and one of the reasons why the fuel prices have gone down is, a portion of the Dodd-Frank bill that apparently was not, now has been maybe undone, but for a long time there, they were prepping up for the fact that they weren't allowed to do the derivatives and stuff, and so they were putting some of their money into the oil business and speculation and junk bonds, funding fracking and things like that as a way of, what is the word, diversify.
That's a good word.
Yeah, and and now it's blowing up in their faces, and there's some reports coming out now that some of the lesser, J.P. Morgan Chase and the Wells Fargo conglomerate are showing their profits are not as robust as they had hoped, because of all the money they're losing because of these companies folding up.
So is there, I mean, based on what you're reading, what you're hearing, John, is there a risk that this could turn into another credit default swap party?
Not just a credit default swap party, but also there is the beginnings of the rumblings of another, I guess, even though we've never really truly came out of it, they're talking about the amount of job losses that are going to start coming out of, particularly places like Texas, where Rick Perry kept standing back and saying how Texas was doing great and, you know, we're a job creator and all that stuff. Well, most of the jobs were just that stuff. It was, vast amounts of fracking and all that, oil business. I mean, if you go down around Southwest Texas around where 83 comes up along the back end of Texas. I mean, 10, 12 years ago, you could drive 83 almost nonstop without, you know, it was, you know, cows and, you know, for a little bit of, you know, scrub forest and, you know, a few illegals running across the street. And now it's like the whole, for a long time there were trucks just running up and down. And every couple, 5-6 miles, you'd see these temporary housing units that were being put together, these like little lots where they would stick all these, trailers and like, you know, I guess they wonder where you put all the FEMA trailers that they could use back when Katrina was used. That's where they ended up. But I mean, you would see mile after mile, every couple of miles you'd see, you know, company housing and all that stuff because they were wells and being built all over the place. But, here in the last, 6 months or so, I mean, the traffic has dropped almost 50%. You can actually go through there now without getting your windshield busted out from all the rocks flying around from the trucks riding around. But, you can tell just by the way that, you know, businesses that just opened up 2 years ago, a little restaurant or something that you would see as you go by, is now has a realty sign hanging off the wall. Because, which this is happening.
You've got my mind kind of spinning here, John. All that oil production in the Bakken fields and the tar sands and yada, 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 that was going to make America freedom and independent and energy and all of that, the happy hoopla. But gas prices only went up. They didn't come down, did they?
Well, they've gone down a lot. I mean, it's compared to, I mean,
no,
what I mean is,
they've come down a lot since the Saudis decided to destroy the Russian and American and Canadian and everybody else's oil industries. But what I'm saying is the American, you know, the boom, I mean, it was a boom, right? And everybody always hears boom. They never remember that the other side of boom is bust. Well, welcome to the bust.
Well, I mean, from what I've read, if they can't make like 60, I think it's $61 or $62 a barrel.
Yeah, I read 65.
Somewhere in the 60s. If they can't make that, then they can't keep doing it. And like I said, the guys I talked to at they were, like I said, they had been let go, and they were, you know, they were getting, you know, they're gathering their stuff, and you know, and they were having lunch and what have you, and they were making preparations, and they were like. And one guy, I mean, he almost had tears in his eyes because he said, you know, he said 4 months ago, he said, you know, we had 1,000 guys on our, you know, in the housing and working on like 10 different, projects that were all fairly close together. And he says that 1,000 guys now is now down to 60 to just basically caretaker the wells because the price has dropped so much.
And yet there's no lesson ever learned that when you participate in a boom and bust economy, the first people to go bust are going to be the people further on the lowest rungs of the ladder. And we fall for this time and time and time again. I mean, we just had an election cycle here in West Virginia, John, where all the Republicans and the people who were running as Democrats, otherwise known as Republican Light, kept hollering that, you know, oh, we're going to... the coal, and if we'll get that Obama EPA off our backs and we'll be producing coal, everybody's going to have jobs again. No, it's a bust. And in the case of West Virginia and coal, it's a permanent bust because we're pretty much mined out.
Well, I'm not just mined out, but, what they loosely call Eastern coal has a much higher sulfur content than the coal in Wyoming and a much higher sulfur content, and therefore is much more expensive and much more difficult to burn. And so you like Wyoming Western coal can be burnt in some of the older plants that are out west, you know, but you can't use that. You know, those Western plants, many of them are not completely up. You know, they don't have the most modern scrubbers and stuff. And so the Eastern coal, you can't use it. The only place they can, the only thing that the most, I would, from one article I read, 65% of what comes out of West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky is almost entirely sent overseas because they can't use it in the United States.
A huge percentage and a growing percentage of what comes out of here is getting on boats, and it goes to China,
yeah.
And it goes to Russia. I mean, there's a Russian company that owns a mining company, and everything that comes out of there goes to Russia. There's another outfit. Everything comes out of it goes to India. Like I said, China, the single largest importer of mountaintop removal coal in the world is the Netherlands. Germany is importing more mountaintop removal coal.
It's up there, you know. There's never been a great recovery, as a guy on that podcast talked about. He says it's a recovery more in name than it is anything else because, you know, we've seen it. And they just had it. I just stumbled over an article on the web today that just about blew my socks off. They said year 2016 is the year of what they call the economic tipping point. And the tipping point they're referring to is the fact that for the first time in modern history, the 1%, this is the numbers they're using in the article, that 1% will own 50% of all the wealth
in the world. Yes.
In the world.
And when you say that it wasn't a great recovery, though, that comes with a caveat, John. It's been a great recovery for Wall Street. It's been a magnificent recovery for that 1%. It's been a tremendous recovery for the coupon clippers and the JP Gottrockses and the GI Love Moneys. It's been great for them, but it is almost as though there has been no recovery at all for working people. And God knows, for the poor. I mean, I think about those guys that hired in 7 months ago up there. How many of them you reckon ran out knowing that they were going to be making the good money, ran right out and bought themselves a brand-new pick-em-up truck?
Well, actually, they didn't make out as good as you think. Because one of the things that I did not know this. I was shocked when I sat there and was listening to this guy. Because of the low population up in that area, people working at McDonald's at $22 an hour. A Big Mac was, you know, the dollar menu Big Mac?
Yeah.
They didn't have a dollar menu. The dollar menu Big Mac was like $2.50, $3.
And again, that's part and parcel of a boom and bust economy, too. Land prices up there went through the roof. You know, renting a fallen down trailer out somewhere on the range, suddenly you were renting it for $4,000 a month instead of the, you know, $125 that it may have been before the boom started.
Well, that's what he was telling me. He said, yeah, the one I really got talking to, he was basically a fitter kind of pipe guy. He told exactly what it was. I feel space cadet kind of guy. I am. I one ear out the other. But he was making $37.50 an hour for basically fitting pipes and what have you. And I know nothing about pipe fitting, so I mean that could be a grand wage or it may not be some grand. But he was telling me that what he was a Tennessee boy that had gone up there, and he had left a. I guess it's a Nissan plant or something like that down in Tennessee that he was working down there, and he would say, down there I was making $16 an hour at the plant, and I got a chance to come up here and do pipe fitting and stuff, and $37 an hour. I was doing great. Yeah, okay. But he said he couldn't, he made money. There's no doubt about it. He'll walk away with a few dollars, but he had uproot his entire life, go up there, and in like 7-8 months, you know, he's got uprooted all over again.
Yeah.
And there you go. It's, and in the end result, he in some ways, he kind of got he gave the impression out that maybe he was a little sorry he'd done it because, he's got a few bucks in his pocket that he can take back with him, but, the cost and expense of getting reestablished and everything else is just going to be, it's going to be bothersome as heck. And my heart went out to him because, I very much feel for people like that because,
they're being used.
Yeah.
And of course, go ahead. I suspect I know the answer, but you tell me. None of these are union jobs, are they?
In the Dakotas? You make funny.
Yeah, right, exactly. No. So they got so they got no protection. They got nothing. They're part that industry is a part of an Ayn Randian anarcho-capitalist libertarian wonderland where everybody's on an even footing between between the money and the labor, and they're just negotiating contracts at arm's length and God bless America, right?
Oh yeah. Now, this piece here, I'm going to have to insert a caveat because I got this second and third hand, but we'll throw it out there anyway because it from what little I can pick up, it sounds right. Got a friend of mine works in D.C., Commerce Department. And, one of the things that his department does is they do what they call white papers on banking, finance, real estate, stuff like that. And, he read a paper which he talked to me about, and he said the most dangerous thing that occurred in this last recovery was you had the Fed doing what they called the QE, the quantitative easing. And what that effectively was is they were buying up paper from the banks that was basically crap paper. It was the mortgage-backed derivatives and all the bad paper that they had.
They were trying to get the poison out of the system.
Right. Well, they went and bought all that stuff. And when they bought the paper, then of course that remonetarizes all that. And then that money, which you were talking about, went right to the wealthy and refilled their pockets for the, investments.
Yeah. It's a giant wealth transfer, from bottom to top. Now, see, when you do a wealth transfer like that from bottom to top, the right wing says, well, that's the miracle of economics and capitalism. But if we want to do a little bit of wealth transfer from the top to the bottom, no, that's socialism. That's Bolshevism. That's communism. That's Kenyan Muslim stuff, right?
Yeah, that's the truth of it. I mean, they sit there, recessions are great for the rich because they can take the money they've got. They can buy up the things that you're foreclosing on your house. You're having to sell your car to get a beat up clunker to drive around because you have to give up the car you got. And so they can get it into a used car dealership and they can turn another buck on it. And, that article that I read that 50% business, I truly believe that's to be the case is that, the richer, they basically can buy the assets on the cheap and then resell it or borrow it or whatever financial yabba-dabba-do is going on. And, I wonder sometimes. I really do. I mean, your Buffett's and stuff like that, the guy made his money and he made it legitimately, like my grandfather said. You don't damn the guy for winning the poker game as long as he doesn't, play by the rules.
Yeah.
But damn, if it seems like these rules are just too tilted to their benefit.
Well, the whole casino is rigged.
Yeah. It's rigged, and even the ones that you might say are relatively honest, they can't help but. That old saying, it's not personal, it's business. When, guy's sitting at the top of the pile, he makes these big decisions, but he's never going to feel the impact of those decisions. It's going to be some, poor schlep living in a trailer, deciding between the can of beanie weenies or the top ramen noodles, what's going to be tonight.
Yeah, and you're not exaggerating, John. That's the American reality. And of course, I've been reading a little bit here and there. The president's got his State of the Union coming up. It's his next to last State of the Union. Next year, his State of the Union will be, I guess, a valedictory of sorts. But he's gonna propose some changes to some tax changes. and they're going to be, and it's going to be for the purpose of creating this everybody gets to go to college for 2 years program. And you and I both know that the poo-flinging monkeys of the Tea Party and the libertarians and the birchers and the usual suspects, the Republican Party, will be screaming communism and you lie before he gets the words community college out of his mouth.
Sure. I think you and I may have mentioned this before, but about 4 or 5 years ago, in a moment of either morality or just because Democrats were in control of the Congress for a little while, they passed an in-house, through the Ethics Committee, they passed a resolution that would prohibit staffers and serving congressmen and senators, and I'm not exactly sure just how broad it was. I'm kind of pulling this out of memory, but that had passed a law that would prohibit them from insider trading, which is what everybody else in the world would be breaking law. But for members of Congress and their staffers, it was okay. It was a side perk. It had been around since the 20s. And that lasted a handful of years. And then once the eyes weren't on it, they quietly slipped a revision in one of the bills to take that away. Because, it's no joke. It's from everything I've been able to figure out and people I've talked to and just occasionally getting on that magic machine box and look at it. These people go in, they may not be rich when they go in. But for a guy or a gal who's making $175,000, $185,000 a year, it is remarkable how rich they are when they come out.
Oh.
There's one guy asked me a question, and I laughed because he was being absolutely earnest about it. It sounded like one of the voices that you do. He goes, "God, why would somebody spend hundreds of millions of dollars to go get a damn job that doesn't pay $200,000 a year?" I looked him straight in the face and I said, "It does pay $200,000 a year. You just don't get the money up front. You get it when you leave." "Really? Oh my God, how's that work?" And I said, "Oh God, if I gotta explain this, I'll be here all day." And it scares me, the fact that so many people, I just talked to one of my relatives a couple of days ago, and this actually kind of somewhat bounces back what we talked about last week. She's been trying to get a job now. She was a part of a grocery store chain and been there for 15 years. That grocery store chain got bought out by one of the larger conglomerates, and they did a lot of reorganization. Redoing and downsizing, but they used all the different words. They didn't just say downsize, and they basically told her that, well, because of our new requirements, you don't have a college education, therefore you can't work here. And she was like, "Well, what do you mean? I've been doing this job 15 years." Well, and they gave something about future advancement. We don't feel comfortable having people here that are not able to be advanced. And that seems to be the new thing now. If you can't be a person that they can groom for advancement, even though you'll never advance, then she got her walking papers and then she started looking around for other jobs. And,
they're not there, are they?
No, not close. Southwestern Virginia? No. If you don't know somebody or get into one of the government jobs, like at the VA hospital or one of the local government jobs that happens to be available, which there are not that many.
Right, and they're not real jobs anyway, because all you gotta do is ask a right winger and they'll tell you the government don't create no jobs.
Oh yeah, well, that's how it works. That the government, that's these people act like the government is not the very thing that people actually are. We created the government. It is part of our society, but according to the right-wingers, it's this alien thing that just hangs over us and takes away our money and tells us we can't, you know, we can't smoke and we've got to wear seat belts and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but you voted for it. Well, I didn't vote for that. And then you, Kenyon Usurper or Loose Flipper or whatever. I didn't vote for him and I never met him. I heard this one guy. He said that today. He said, I've been, you know, this is 7-8 years of that son of a bitch in there, and I still haven't met a person that voted for him.
Well, you got to. Did you tell him he was going to have to get out a little bit more and go to something besides Klan meetings?
I don't know. He was awful big, so I thought I was thinking. Maybe.
Oh, you mean discretion? Like, discretion became the better part of valor.
No, broken down body was the better part of pain. He was a little wild eyed, so I was like, I'll just let this one go.
Oh, and they are. I mean, they are. Let's see. I got a story here, John. I mean, you kind of put me in mind of it. It comes out of Texas. And this is, you know, this is a real Lulu. Where is she? There she is. Wealthy Texas mom objects to Working Poor book and wants teens to read Ayn Rand instead. It's a story out of the Highland Park Independent School District. They temporarily suspended The Working Poor, Invisible in America, and six other books that were on the list this past fall because parents complained. This is a story out of the Dallas Morning News. It's a book by a Pulitzer Prize-winning author by the name of David Shipley, and he details and tells the story of the lives of people who live just above the poverty line, even though they're more than willing to work. So now a formal complaint's been filed, the parent has suggested that students learn about poverty by reading We the Living by Ayn Rand, America the Beautiful by Ben Carson, or Out of the Dust by Karen Hess. And of course, that book is for 8 to 12-year-olds, not high school juniors. Of course, then again, maybe it's relevant in Texas. Who knows? But you know what got the parent all worked up, John? She said that... She said that the author depicts abortion and sexual abuse, showing women, quote, as weak, pathetic, ignorant sexual objects and incapable beings. But of course, the creepy sex scenes that Ayn Rand writes, that's good for the cheerins. You bet.
Oh, you don't even want to know. Like I said, I worked in D.C. years back in the 80s. You don't even want to know the rumors about Greenspan.
Oh, no, I've read some of them, and they're creepy. Sitting at Elisa Rosenberg's feet and, you know, kind of licking her toes every now and then with a sort of long lizard-like tongue.
No, I'd rather go to a fuzzy convention than listen to even think about that stuff.
Fuzzy
Holy
convention.
Moly. Because, you know, these people, and I hate to sound mean about it, but they don't. They actually go back and they think because they have no real true knowledge of history and have no interest in true history. They truly believe that, you know, the magic time of the U.S. was like 1954. That was the heyday.
Economically, that was the heyday of unions. That was the high water mark of union membership in the United States. Of course, everybody else. If you weren't white, you were not on the upside. But yeah, sure. That's their little Leave It to Beaver black and white world that they yearn so desperately to go back to, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just amazing. You know, I don't know. I'm thinking, in the last maybe 3 or 4 months, and maybe it's just because, you know, the election or something like that, but, you know, I'm actually starting to bump across a few people that are not so much questioning, but you can tell that some of the fever might be breaking in a few of them. Because, like I said, I travel the country a lot, and I run into the same people over and over again in different parts of the country as we travel along. And after a while, if you've got a good memory, you can kind of follow the timeline, as it were. You bump into them, and then maybe see them 3 or 4 months later, and you talk to them again. And sometimes the same basic conversations kind of pop up, but you can kind of tell the flavor changes a little bit. And it's like... It's an amazing thing that they'll sit there and they worship this, you know, they sit there and they'll do America, the best country in the world, America, 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 you know, red, white, and blue, blah, blah, blah. And then you remind them that Ayn Rand was born in Russia. And she was basically a card-carrying Bolshevik for a long time.
And then they didn't want anything to do with her and threw her ass out.
Yeah, she got, from what I remember reading on an article about her, she wasn't even going to get a degree when the politics changed, and then through some political actions and in the early days, they basically made special dispensation for her and a handful of other people to finish up their degrees, and then they pretty much said, finish your degree and then leave the country. Go away. We don't like
it. And of course, you know, she made oodles of money on all those terrible books, and she made money on the rights to the Fountainhead, and just about drove the director and Gary Cooper half out of their minds. And yet, somehow or another, at the end of her life, she winds up on Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, despite the fact that was instant hypocrite. Just add hot wingnut.
Well, not just that, but you mentioned that it was either the last time or the time before we talked, and I actually went and I went and dug in my library, because it kind of vaguely reminded me of something, and it turns out that the revisionists have already been to work at that. Some of the articles that I got in the library and stuff that they're talking about that I pulled up on the Google talk about how even after she was basically convinced to get it by her advisors.
Well, it was a social worker
and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then Ayn Rand then said, you know, it was against my will, blah, 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 all this stuff. So it's like, you know, sure, I'll take the money, but I'm not going to admit that I took the money because, you know, let's face it, you're rich, but you also can get free health care and stuff. Hey, you get to keep more of your own money.
As if somebody from the government was coming around once a month with a check, putting a gun to her head and saying, endorse this. Well, okay,
yeah, right.
it's against my principle. Oh, money? Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that saves me having to spend my money. Oh, I love you bunches. You know, it's like good night shirt. But, I thought I'd mention that stuff about the oil business when you were talking about it. I said you might get a little kick out of it that this domino effect that's going on. Everything was doing so wonderful, and you're hearing it now. I heard it on Fox News here about 2 or 3 days ago. They're actually making a statement, and this is bareface, teeth in their mouth, bald head hanging out. They're beginning to speculate, well, these low oil prices might not be good for the economy, you know, and I'm like, do you people hear yourselves? 6 months ago, you were bitching about how high the oil costs were and how Obama was, you know, high. And, oh, my God, now you're getting everything. And they had a beautiful little thing about it.
Obama came
into office.
No, now it's the Kenyan Muslim is using his Muslim connections to destroy America's red, white, and blue patriotic oil industry.
Exactly.
But with the bust side cranking up here, oddly enough, that oil was flowing somewhere between, what, 16,000 or 10,000 and 50,000 gallons per hour? I mean, that's pretty amazing. Because I don't know that much about pipelines. I don't know what kind of pressure is behind it. But Jim, gee, holy cow!
Well, if this leak is a Bakken leak, it's not just high pressure. I mean, stop and think about it for a second. When I stop at a truck stop to pump fuel into my truck, okay, you got the thing that the pumps. Now, these are just, and I'll say little because we're comparing it to the pipes that we're talking about this leak. But the little pipe, the little tube that goes into my tank is pumping at 60 gallons, I mean, it's 60 gallons a minute.
Yeah.
And it's, they even have a sign that says, our pumps are 60 gallons a minute. Be careful if it falls, it could blow, you know, all that good stuff. Now, take something that's a pipe that's,
If you use that the estimates of how much spilled, the low end is 2.7 gallons per second.
Right. Now take this and add this to it. In order for that Bakken crude to go through the pipes, it has to be heated to like 110 degrees.
I'm not so sure about that, John. Now that's the tar. Now definitely the tar sand sludge has to be heated like that, but the Bakken, the Bakken has a volatility rating in excess of 30%, gasoline is 19%.
Yeah, I know one of them you had to heat it up, and it was one of the questions they were talking. I think it was the Keystone or something like that. They were talking that the stuff is not just going to be large volume, but also it actually be hot.
Yeah, that's the thing. The tar sands pipelines have to be heated because the stuff in its natural state is goo.
Yeah.
And it is sludge.
You know, I've always been remarked of, I used to be a Star Trek fan, and,
same
you thing. Know, I don't remember which episode it was or where it was, but some Vulcan, maybe Spock, maybe the other ones, you know, Star Trek would occasionally get on its little high horse and make little comments about the 20th century and stuff. And I remember it was either one of the movies or the books, or maybe it was one of the books. There was a lot of different books that came out, you know, that was both the episodes and also fresh work written by people in tribute to Star Trek. But there was one I remember distinctly, one Vulcan made the comment that the thing that concerned us the most about the humans when we first met them is their history of their logic. They would pollute their planet and call it wise. And that's always resonated with me. You know, you would think anybody with intelligence and with wisdom would look and say, let's see, on the right hand, we can put up solar panels and generate electricity without as much pollution, without all the ecological damage, and long term, it's going to be cheaper and yada, yada, yada. And on the left hand, we can stick a soda straw in the ground. My English obviously is not first tonight. In the ground and suck up something out of the ground. And then this valuable, valuable commodity, we are then going to burn it. It's like burning paper. It's like burning money. And I've always wanted, to me, it's always a sign of their logic or something.
Well, in 1972, in one of his novels, Kurt Vonnegut noted that West Virginia, in the space of about 100 years, had managed to burn itself up for heat.
Yeah. Well. You look at that and you go, even right now with the so-called cheap fuel, you're burning something that could make, you know, plastics and composite plastics. You can make things that when you're finished using them or they no longer serve, you can take the part, put it in a big pot, melt it down, and remake it and reuse it. And you can reuse it over and over and over again. Or you can turn it into a fuel, stick it in a tank, component and a motor, and then what do you got? A memory.
Right.
And yet, in our world today, they think that is the smart way to do things. And I suspect, as old as I am, I suspect before I die, there's going to be a lot of people going to be going, maybe we were wrong about this.
Hey, well, I mean, technologies are generally found when cultures have to transition, because I guess as human beings we're not very good at being proactive. For instance, the island of Britain was largely deforested at roughly the same time in history that Central America was deforested. Just nothing, no trees left, because they burned them all for heat and used them for shipbuilding and yada, yada, yada. Well, the difference between the Mayan people and the English people is that the English discovered coal. And within a generation, London was all... It got so bad that at one point in time, the King of England forbade the burning of coal in London, if you can imagine, because it was making people so sick. And even they, in that benighted state of science, could at least imagine some sort of a connection between the two things. But the Mayans didn't have coal. The Mayan civilization collapsed. The English civilization flourished. And it's the discovery of coal that leads eventually to the Industrial Revolution, and everything that came with it. And now we're on the cusp of another. Of another paradigm shift, we have the technology to get this right, John. You know what I mean?
We have the technology, and this is the part that bothers me, is we have an entire, and I'll be polite and say, working minority of the population that they don't want it. They don't realize, and this. You know, again, there's a book that came out several years ago, maybe actually now, probably more 10, 12 years ago, and I can forget the author's name, but the title of it was called The End of Work. And if you can get any of your people can get on the internet and look it up, it's a bit dated now, but I still have a copy of it. But we are entering into a period of time where for most working people, their skills will be, for all practical intents and purposes, valueless. There'll be a robot to do your cash sharing work. There's going to be a robot or something like that that's going to do your stocking and shelves. There, you know, we just had an article in the paper for a few weeks ago about Google testing cars that drive themselves. We are within probably less than a century where if you don't have extremely specialized and extremely valuable skills, then you're going to have probably, I'll just throw a number out, but say 60 or 70% of the population that will be not just unemployed, but will be unemployable. Unless you just have let's go send this guy here to go pick up some trash off the beach and we'll give him some food stamps. Because that's what it's going to be. Because, most people like me, I'm in the 50s. I'm too old now to get, to go through one of these job training programs that was offered me a couple of years ago. Because being a truck driver, you know, there's always potential health issues and things like that. So I always looked around to see what my options were. And for me, if I end up stopped driving a truck for whatever reason, then there's no other job out there that comes even to the pay that I'm making now, which is not great, but, you know, I can at least make a living right now. But if I'm not able to drive a truck, then I'll be competing with millions of other people for, you want fries with that, or, be a maid in a motel, or the male version, or maid, or whatever. But, and that's a scary thing when, you're competing with people much younger than you are who are coming out of school who are looking for the same jobs. In the United States right now, the teenage and young people's unemployment rate is staggeringly high. And it's worse overseas.
Yeah.
You can't
help but get a sense, John, that there's something in the tunnel and it's coming toward us.
Yeah, it's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a train coming the other way. Because, you know, I strongly think that at some point, maybe in the next 50, 60 years, you say paradigm shift, let's call it what it is. There's going to be a revolution, and it's not going to be the revolution that the right-wingers talk about America raising, although it may well have components of that, you know, with the guns and all that stuff. But it's mostly going to be an entire generations of people that are not going to be able, they're not going to be able to hold on to their houses, they're not going to be able to hold on to their, one of the things I see right now driving the road that is totally amazing to me. And people don't notice it unless you actually drive on the road. But there are so many RVs out there, and these are not guys out doing vacationing, because these are all old ratty RVs with, old bed sheets for curtains and the thing looks like it's been beat up forever and a day, and you're seeing millions of them out there. And these are people who've lost their homes, but they happen to still have, they still own that vehicle. And they're just driving around the country, wandering around. I see them in the truck stops now. They're showing up in truck stops, taking up spaces.
A sort of economic flying Dutchman.
Yeah. These people, and I've talked to a few of them at the Kona rest areas and stuff, and the stories are almost always the same. You know, I lost my house. I lost my job. I got injured. I got a bad back. Blah, blah, blah. And the reasons are myriad. But the end result's the same. They could not keep what they had, and so they focused everything on making sure that little RV was paid for so that they could go wander the country homeless, basically. It's kind of a slightly upper-grade homeless. And most of them are living on a Social Security check or a disability check. And you read in the paper a couple of days ago, now the Republicans are talking about they want to go redo that. We got to redo this because those disabled people, 50% of them are gaming the system and all this stuff. And I'm going, holy crap, these people have been done the kick to the curb, and that's who they're going to go after.
Right.
Don't mind the banker that just, escaped the $150 million bonus check out of Skyping out a bunch of money, but no. We're going to go after the little Social Security guy.
Right, something that Sandra pointed out via Twitter a little bit ago, Sandra noted, there's going to be a huge problem for banks if pauperized populations can't borrow or spend. It's like something they're ashamed to admit, but sooner or later, the 1% has to acknowledge that they need us to survive, because the 1% are the human economic equivalent of hothouse flowers. They can't live in the wild on their own. They've got to have somebody's back to ride, and we're the backs.
Yep. Now, this thing has been going on for a while. You've had the Fed creating money, basically out of thin air with interest rates to the banks. They're measured in, one or two basis points. And so essentially borrowing the money for free. And, we talked about this back in the past, so I won't go into the boring details, but if you can create money out of basically thin air, and then get people to borrow that money and then charge them interest on that promise is what it is. Sooner or later, that house of cards is going to collapse. We went a long time, a very long time, with a system that worked because you had strong unions. Because, I said this once to a guy who asked the question. He goes, well, how many, he flat out question. He says, what makes good wages? And I said, it has nothing to do with your skills. It has nothing to do with the so-called value in the marketplace that you that you talk about so much in the, you know, libertarian sense, it comes from one thing. Wages are a manifestation of political power. If you have political power in the form of a union or the ability to elect people into office that can pass laws to support that, you will have decent wages. But the minute you lose that ability, then the capitalist is going to step in, and it's his heyday. He's going to set the rules. And for him, everything is for profit. Everything. Every turn of dime, every turn of dollar, every time, every piece, everything. If he can get, and you hear, and I've said this before, and I'm probably standing, so I sound like I'm jumping on a bandwagon again. When a businessman goes, I want to go to a right-to-work state, and I want to be able to pay with the market base. Well, if you take that and you just simply let it run to its end result, that comedian Chris Rock said it best. The reason why the company pays you minimum wage is because that's the lowest wage they can get away with. If they could get that lifted, they'd pay you nothing. And to them, that's the best world. Slavery is the best world for them. And that's just the way it is. If they can get you to work for free, put you in prison, or somehow get you wrapped up in something that's going to say, you work for free, you work in a prison. You get there's prisons right now working, you know, doing jobs, and they're not being paid minimum wage. They're being paid $1, $1.20, $1.50, $1.75, with the rest going to the contractor that's running the system. And so you're seeing glimmers of that right now. And that's how it's going to be. And unfortunately, I probably bored you to death here. So
you have not bored me. You have not bored me in the least. I always enjoy our conversations, John.
Yeah, and we'll let somebody else jump in there and have their little soapbox time, and I appreciate you all immensely.
Well, and we appreciate your thoughts as well, and stay safe out there.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye now. John calling from somewhere out on the road, and no, there's nothing boring about anything he's saying. It opens up tons of questions. Devin just noted via chat, if you stand tall, no one can ride your back. I responded, if you have billions, you have ladders. And Devin asking the question, so how do we wilt the flowers, the hothouse flowers? Round up. No, they'll have themselves gene spliced. They'll have some of that goat stomach innard spliced into their genes, and they'll be Roundup resistant. You know, just like number two, feel great corn. But it's a fair question. And unfortunately, the stranglehold that they have put us on, put on us. I mean, really, you're working for minimum wage at Walmart, and everybody else is as scared as you are of what happens if you lose the job. Tell me you're going to go out there and sign a card and become an organizer for UFCW or SEIU or whomever. Because, well, you get the idea. It's hard to escape this feeling that what did Dr. Thompson say? The hogs are in the tunnel and they will travel on a road of bones. Our bones. Let's run over to the gizmo line. I think we have Bill. Hey, Bill.
Good evening.
How are you?
I don't know. Who knows anymore? That was a very strong conversation. This guy is a working man.
Yeah.
But he has gathered a lot of the correct information. Bob, I didn't hear, I think I heard of Ayn Rand first in about 1961 or two, maybe. And I worked for a guy who gave us a book called None Dare Call It Freedom, and it was from the Birch Society. And I just realized his last name, this guy had an unusual last name. It was the same as a World War II general. In fact, the World War II general was I don't think a man you saw up front, you know, leading guys in the battle situation, you know. He was some kind of a, you know, whatever. And I'm trying to get a hold of the owner of the company's son because he was about my age and we used to have lunch together a lot. Oh, well, that's another story. What's going on with you?
You know, I saw this coming. I knew this Moran Monday was going to be here, and it was going to happen on MLK Day. And
yeah.
I've been kind of cringing all day long because I knew that we were going to be absolutely up to our ears in the right wing assholery over this, and I've still got more stuff.
Yeah, well, they don't get it, you know. I remember the Montgomery bus strike, you know, and how that was worked, you know, they worked it because it was, and Bob, how ridiculous. You couldn't sit past, you know, in front of a certain line on the bus. Who lost that damn war anyhow? I'll be.
Yeah, yeah.
Although the Southerners did take a beating, not from the feds as much from the profiteers. It's just these guys saw a chance to profit. What do they call them? Scallywags were the Southern profiteers, and carpetbaggers were the Northern profiteers that came into this.
Well, but historically, that was the negative language that was used by embittered Southern aristocrats who didn't like the fact that there were people coming down during Reconstruction trying to impose the meaning of the Union victory onto those self same Southerners who had been divested of their property.
Oh yes.
So they created a mythology of the carpetbagger and the scallywag.
Okay. Well, they also developed the lost cause idea.
Yeah, that takes about 10. It's about 10 years after the Civil War, and that same disaffected wealth class creates the notion of the lost cause.
Yeah.
Which I suppose they were still celebrating yesterday on Robert E. Lee Day in the Old Dominion, you know, celebrating old Marse Robert, who should have been hanged for treason.
Marse Robert was a traitor, whether we like to say so. He was a gentlemanly figure, there's no doubt about that.
Treason doesn't always wear a black cape and have a curling handlebar mustache and tie innocent little virgin girls to railroad tracks. Sometimes it just gets itself involved in a treasonous war that costs 600,000 lives.
Yeah. Not to change the subject, you know, I listen to a lot of old radio. Good stuff, you know. It paints a sociological picture. For instance, one company that sponsors one show was the Blue Coal Company. But they were working out of the anthracite from Pennsylvania, according to their ads. And they told you how to do this gimmick to automatically close and open a damper. And I don't know coal stoves that well. The only thing I know about them, I was working at my uncle's one time, and I had to get out and move the car out of the garage. It was a rickety-ass truck coming up to dump coal in this coal bin. And the only other story I know is when a guy missed a coal bin and dumped it down somebody's basement. He got the wrong door.
Oops.
Or window. Or whatever. Yeah, that was nice. And so I remember coal.
Well, this house was built with a coal chute in it. It had a coal fired furnace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the coal furnaces were converted to gas, and I've seen some really old furnaces in some of the rental units that I lived in with my first wife when we were kids. In fact, I lived in one rental unit with a guy who owned the property across the street, which was a beautiful little place they called the Belgian Village. It was a bunch of little castle-like homes. And when you went in the backyard of his place, you were looking down at an empty piece of woods, you know. You would think you're out in the middle of nowhere, but you were 5 minutes from the intersection of East 105th and Euclid, which was 105th and Euclid was very close to the Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic is, what, 93rd and Euclid is more than that. And I should know. I've been there. And, yeah, just excuse me. Excuse me when I do the move a little bit. They were selling this coal like it was the most harmless thing in the world. And it keeps your toasty warm. Yeah, I suppose so, but that's the same way you feel when your house is burning around you. You know, it's warm there too, isn't it? But yeah, their commercials are, I wish I could tape them. You can find them on the internet on this, these old radio show things. They run a lot of the commercials. And, you get a picture of the country, you know, at the end of the advertising agencies and how they were selling. In fact, I heard Lucille Ball playing a dramatic role on radio show. And, on one of the radio shows. You know, when you say Lucille Ball, what do you think of, well, and making cookies is one.
And mega veggie vitamin.
Yeah. She was a great comedian, and in fact, Desi Arnaz appears in a movie with the title of Baton with Robert. I forget who was playing the leader of these Americans were supposed to hold a bridge. In, you know, the, God, my memory, my mind anymore is sliding away. The Karen Peninsula, they were holding this thing, and Desi Arnaz appears as a young man from California. So he was playing a role there. I guess he did a lot of acting, too. And then when the two of them like, got married, they had a gold mine. That show, when she was pregnant, in reality, you know, Lucille Ball was pregnant, and they dramatized the baby's birth.
Right, right.
I think they were the only early television show that showed a couple in bed together. But since they were married, you know, it wasn't any, but that was a big step for the morality of the times. Well, I'm going to keep you, but I'm going to ask you what you thought of the football games yesterday.
It's not so. They were all, well. They were both awesome in their in their own ways. I don't know. Scott from Sweden may not have TiVo'd them yet, so I don't know if we should talk about them or not.
We won't talk about them.
Yet. But I enjoyed them immensely.
Well, the New England coach here when he was a young man. He coached in Cleveland.
Yeah, Belichick.
Yeah, and he knows his business. People here hated the guy. They somehow confused him with Art Modell moving the team to Baltimore. But Modell was busted. And Art also was a big contributor to the Cleveland Clinic. He raised an awful lot of money, so... You know, here's football on one hand, and here's health on the other side. I have to say, well, the guy balanced out. Although I think that in my weak memory, Paul Brown was probably one of the finest coaches of the game. He developed there was an old guy named Maury Cono. I don't know if I talked about him, but he was the equipment manager for Paul. And when somebody put an elbow on the Otto Graham's face to the tune of 30-some stitches. Maury went home and he developed a single-bar face mask guard because the backfield people weren't wearing And, of course, the linemen were. And I tell people when I learn something about pro football and get a lot of laughs, that, what's his name, the fat guy who did a book called Fatso, which is a really good look at them. Because everything was so different. One of the Detroit and Baltimore baseball managers talked about taking the trains from to go east, you know, to play the eastern teams like Boston, American League, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Athletics. Yeah, that's where they were, Philadelphia. And the Washington Senators, first in war, first in peace, and last of the American League. That was a common saying in those days. But those guys got on those trains and out came the cars and out went the gin rummy game. And, you know, that's how they traveled by train in those days. Which is something I wish I had done, by the way. I'm kicking myself for not picking up the Transcontinental Line in Chicago and going to the West Coast on it just for the pure pleasure, you know?
Yep.
And, of course, the Women Powerful Unions was the Pullman Porters, a black union, and I think a couple of their lawyers were made big names for themselves. There's so much to learn about the history of this country, much less the history of the rest of the world, that you can get amazed, Bob. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You can get lost in the maze and, poof, you know, and try to figure out what's really going on. Because you don't want to become so paranoid about it that, you know, the Republican congressman left the door open. What do you want to do? Everybody catch cold? You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because there's enough to hold him responsible for. You got to watch just how far you go. And they say, I always come back to Mr. Hitler's. A lot of guys that gave him the push, one of them was Erich von Ludendorff, the First World War Kaiser General, who him and Hindenburg ran the war on the Western Front. They ran it on the Eastern Front for a while. And then I might even get into that. You and I know the amount of casualties on the Western Front and everywhere else. Turks and Russians in the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Between Turkey and Russia, they were killing each other. The Austrians and the Italians. I think Hemingway did a thing on that. Anyway, I will let you go, but yeah, it just, that man interests me so much. He's a working class guy, and he's got a finger on it. He sees it, because I used to listen to the All Night Trucking Show, and after a while, the steam was coming out of both ears, you know, in my case. So you can't, what do you do? How do you talk to people like that? And you see it. What is the Rippy Mark, by the way?
The Rippy. A million years ago, in between college years, I worked one summer at a chain that no longer exists in Alabama called Zippy Mart, and we changed the name to Rippy Mart, because the prices were so wildly inflated, and that has just become my generic term for little convenience stores.
So,
yeah, down to the local Rippy Mart.
My first wife and I would, no, my second wife and I were coming back from, not Hilton Head, the other one, the Wright brothers.
Nag's Head, Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, we're coming back on the back roads. I don't know why I did it. And there was a store and we stopped and I walked in there and this guy has a box full of halves, not refrigerated, just laying there. I said, geez, a Virginia ham. Got to have one of those. It's an idea what it really tastes like. And, man, this stuff was so tough and so salty. You had to practically boil it for hours to get it to a point where you could eat the damn stuff. And the salt content, of course, was you and I wouldn't dare eat it. I mean, that was a funny thing. I bought this ham, and we did end up cooking it, but I said, my God, what did I buy this thing for? Weren't there any saddles or shoe leather around that I could have invested in. Anyhow, you take care of yourself.
All right, you be good, Bill. We'll talk
so,
soon.
Yeah, that guy was that man was so close on the money that I still can't believe how close he is. He's a working. The man is definitely a working class man. Anyway, stay out of trouble.
I'm gonna try. You do the same.
Okay. Hang in.
All right. See you, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill calling from Cleveland. The legendary incomparable Mr. Stress. Oh, let's see. About 11 minutes past the hour. You know, there's so much more stuff that's out here, out there yet. That we can consume the rest, with which we can consume the remainder of this Moran, this MLK Day Moran Monday. Oh God! What do you say we take a trip to South Carolina, Stan? This should be fun. So over the weekend, the South Carolina Tea Party had their little conclave, clavering gathering, whatever they call it. And they invited William Finley. He calls himself Wild Bill. He's a right winger who does this conservative cowboy thing. And he declared in South Carolina, much to the joy of the weirdos in attendance. Oh hell, let's just go to the audio, shall we?
I'm getting the signal here, so I'm going to skip ahead to the fun part. How appropriate that we are here.
And he's got him a blue shirt and a black leather vest and a black cowboy hat, standing in front of some sort of backdrop with a American flag and a Bill of Rights on it and a Liberty Bell. So, you know, freedom.
Right after the Martin Luther King holiday. Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream, and it was a good one. He dreamed of a day when skin color would not matter anymore. A time, a day, when character would be more important than skin color. But when we look at what's happened...
Did I always worry. I always worry that you put the hockey puck away. Because you're going to want to turn this one around and get a new bite mark in it. Bite down real good. Tape it in. You know, like that. Mm-hmm. Because did I mention that Wild Bill is a white conservative cowboy? Yeah, what we're going to learn is, well, go to the audio, Bob.
Happening in the USA today, it's pretty easy to see that Dr. King's dream got hijacked along the way.
Did it now? It got hijacked, the dream.
I believe that racism would have died out in this country a long time ago, except that some people figured out that racism can be very profitable, both financially.
Listen to the white people clapping.
Both financially and politically. And now, those who are most vocal about Martin Luther King Jr. being their hero seem to be the most race-driven people in America.
If only those black people would stop being so racialist, racist, racy, well, we could have a colorblind society where white people wouldn't be so discriminated against. I mean, that's the gravamen of this guy's argument, is that somehow or another he is, would they not let you check into the hotel, Wild Bill? Did they ask you to go round back to eat? Did you have to drink from a separate water fountain? Was there a gang of black folks outside your hotel with a rope and some torches and some crosses what was on fire? Because they's going to kill you for your white skin, Bill? Dumbass.
The left have mastered the art of turning every issue into a skin color issue. Character be damned.
Got a lot of nerve talking about character, seeing as how he ain't got none.
Actually, racism for political purposes is a big business in the USA, and manufactured racism has been used to hurt the Tea Party from day one. And I think it's about time we did something about that.
Yeah!
There's...
Clap, dummies!
There's
wait. Okay, so they've got a two-camera shot going on. They got a close-up on old Wild Bill, and they got a shot from the back of the room. Yeah, I'm looking. Hey, wow. Be a lot of women in here for that newspaper in Israel to erase. No black people to erase. Man, that is one lily-white little gathering. Mm-hmm.
If Martin Luther...
All them people being discriminated against by the black racialists.
If Luther King Jr. was alive today, the liberal left would spit in his face because he would be such a threat to their political agendas.
You got that? Liberals can't like Dr. King because, see, liberals, don't share his dream of a world where it's safe for teabaggers to not be discriminated against. Yes, poor little teabaggers. I know. Breaks you up, doesn't it? Out there, all that discrimination. No, we'd spit in Dr. King's face, we would. Because it was the conservatives. It was the family values, Christian white people who was out. Oh, wait, no, they were the ones bombing the churches, the turning loose dogs. There's that question Ron in Raleigh asked earlier today. What side of the Edmund Pettus Bridge you reckon Wild Bill would have been on, Clap, dummies. Ain't clapping enough. Don't you know what they paid him?
We are the people who practice Dr. King's dream.
The Tea
Party. It is the Tea Party where people are not judged by the color of their skin. And it is Tea Party Americans who believe that character still counts.
Told you, it is the only quote from Dr. King that white people know. I have a dream that someday little white children will not be discriminated against. I have a dream that white people will be judged by the content of their character, not their racism. Oops. Now, just in case anybody was wondering about these magnificently unracist teabaggers. They got a little bit of a history of some racism of their own, I just say. Yeah. You're still not clapping and yelling loud enough, dummies.
So today, I am officially announcing that the Tea Party is taking Dr. Martin Luther King away from the liberal left.
Really? You're hijacking Dr. King? You're kidnapping Dr. King, are you? Wild Bill. Yeah. That's pretty wild. Carol Baker pointing out, gotta love white blaxplaining racism when he doesn't know shit about racism. Racism means there's one group being oppressed by another and the power structure belongs to the oppressors. When did the black folks get all the power? Well, see, they've got special magic powers, Miss Carol, because they can make white racists feel bad, and they can make other people not like white racist teabaggers. See how it works? It's reverse racism. That's what it is. And now the dummies are hooting. Yeah, now they got a broad shot from the back of Wild Bill with a wide-angle fish-eyed lens. And nope, that's all salt. No pepper in there, baby. Mm-mm.
They have disgraced the name of that man for far too long, and it's time
that
to
man.
Call him out on it.
That man?
From this day forward, Dr. Martin Luther King is officially a Tea Party hero.
Woo-wee! Man,
The rubes done jumped up on their little old white feet, and they clapping real good now. And there you go. Yeah, Carol's got it exactly. Reverse racism, my ass. The people making a mint fomenting racism are the tea bigots. And here they are, on their feet, a clapping. Oh, they just so happy that they're so happy about how white they are and how Dr. King's all white now. Hoo-wee, we done took Dr. King back. Hoo! Yeah. Sit down, dummies.
And to you race-baiting promoters of division and hatred, you're not getting him back until you renounce your shameful skin color politics and start practicing the politics of character.
In other words, we're not going to take that white shoe polish off of Dr. King until you quit supporting that one in our White House. Dang it. Yeah.
Oh, the liberal left will go nuts because it means America's going to start asking good questions. Like, why is the Tea Party putting Martin Luther King on their signs? I thought they were a bunch of racists.
Well, they are a bunch of racists. And an interesting question coming in from Gerald. So have they whitened Dr. King like they whitened Jesus? Is that what this means? You betcha. Absolutely. Like I said earlier this morning on Facebook, about 10 years from now, we'll have little hollowed out Martin heads that'll have solar cells in them that'll charge by the power of the sun, and they'll go on sale the day after Christmas. Yep.
And finally, we might start getting some honest dialogue about race issues in America. Don't you think it's about time?
I do. Let's have that dialogue. Let's explain the history of racism in this country, who invented it, where it came from, and who's still practicing it. I mean, you Wild Bill.
Now, this speech is being broadcast all over the USA. So if we step outside and listen carefully, we might hear a strange sound, kind of like chimpanzees.
Oh, no, he did. Yeah, he did. Really?
I am Wild Bill for America. Thank you for having me here.
And you are dumber than a handful of hammers. No, a chimpanzee joke. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Goddess of irony. Always at work. Note coming in from Steve in China. The idols of the market, going back to what Bill and John were talking about. Once you get past the idea that working for a living is some sort of virtue in itself, it starts to make sense that what people need to start demanding is to be paid for not working, something like compensating farmers during the Great Depression for not growing crops that had no ready market. The current system, based on lowest cost of labor and the recycling of consumer desires, is broken. And you don't need a master's degree to grind coffee beans at Starbucks. If folks were paid accordingly for lack of needed labor and thus a fair wage, you'd be surprised how soon another more rational model of political economy would become the norm, increasing, but really, outside of some sort of golden age of sitting around and philosophizing about how screwed up the system actually is, maybe it's time to pay most folks for just being idle in an increasingly automated and labor non-intensive world. It's not irrational economics, only bad ideology that is killing us. Guards, Steve in China. And I'm kind of down with that. Let's think about living. Let's think about food, shelter, needs. Apparently, Wild Bill has done got under the skin of Ron and Raleigh. Didn't you have an article in the stack about the Klan? I guess they're just a fraternal organization based on European pride. None of these people are the least bit racist. Damn, I swallowed my dang hockey puck. Did anybody ask Majority Whip Scalise about his vote against the MLK holiday?
Well, no, because if we was to do that, that would piss off David Duke. And David Duke said if people don't lay off Steve Scalise, he's going to start outing some more Klan Republicans. Somehow that doesn't work much as a threat for me. Ron and Raleigh also pointing out that sound you hear, that whining sound, is MLK spinning in his grave. And this is from Robert in Australia. Jesus, 9/11. Yes, Lois. Robert pointed out earlier, and this kind of goes hand in hand with what Steve in China was saying, jobs, jobs, jobs is an excuse used out here from time to time to justify insert whatever here. If supporters of the pipeline are really interested in jobs, 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 what's wrong with building solar panels in the USA and covering every roof in the USA? That would probably occupy two or even, you know, three people a weekend. Or maybe build some of those wind turbines that don't work. Robert notes, the stupid, it hurts as us. And it does. It's a deep ache in between, right between the eyes and going straight through to between the ears. It hurts. Hey, thanks to Frank, we are now only $40 away from the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you very kindly, Frank. And hopefully more company will come along to help out in that regard. Just $40 away, and, well, you know, who knows what could happen. Maybe get going toward Tuesday. It's always a possibility. Thank you also to Irish Dave for his help and to Faith for her help. It is much appreciated. Let's run over to the... Well, you didn't stay connected long enough, Robert. You got to give a fella a chance to get to the phone. And this is, okay, so this one's a little bit salacious, but it's more in Monday, so, yeah. Tim from L.A. And by the way, we had a note from Tim, too. Tim said, subject line, going to school. You may be correct when you tell me to just stay in school, Bob. In 50 to 60 years, when we do have that paradigm shift, you think it's going to take that long, Tim? This will mean anyone who's not up to date with the latest technology will not only be unemployed, but unemployable. I mean, driverless cars, space elevators, nanotechnology, and other advancements in technology will leave people behind. So then, do we allow people to be left behind, or do we advance our knowledge and reinvest in the people? Sure seems that with the new paradigm, we'll see what we read about back in the 20s and 30s with the Depression, but this time it would not be a financial depression, but an educational depression. And the Republicans don't want us to have free education at the community college level? No, they don't. You need to be desperate and hungry, so that you'll live in the Ayn Rand, Milton Friedman nightmare wonderland of capitalism. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan notes, it is a sign of postmodern racism that the oppressors publicly co-opt the symbols and signifiers of the oppressed. So we forced the holiday on them, and now they're on. Well, they've just okay. You made us have a whole okay. We're going to turn him into a right wing icon. He's going to be Black Ronald Reagan. Dr. King is. That's what he's going to be. Absolutely. Mondays. They can get a little painful. Lines are open, by the way. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, that's the Gizmo line. And, of course, Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. All right, Robert, let's see if you're there. Are you there, Robert?
Can you hear me?
I got you, I think.
Okay. I worked here before and had, like, two different feeds going. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm having the same problem. I've got two feeds coming in through the audio. Let me see if I can get rid of one.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, I've only got one stream going.
Okay, what I did is I killed my tune-in feed.
That helps.
So we should have just you and me on Skype. Where to begin? Well, of course, the real fun will begin tomorrow night with the State of the Union address. You still with me?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. Of course, I get worked up real easy by these right-wingers. I listened to a few minutes of Sean Hannity this afternoon. That's enough to raise your blood pressure 30 or 40 points. I see Sarah Palin has posted some wonderful pictures about American Sniper.
Oh, yeah, and we've still got American Sniper in the stack, too, Robert. I'm glad you mentioned it. Your audio just kind of went down rather dramatically.
Okay. I've never used Skype like this before, so I'll try to set a little closer to the microphone and see if that'll help. You still have me?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I'm just like a lot of progressives. I'm really angry at our side that we don't stand up more for ourselves. This afternoon, I live about 15 miles out of Fairmont Morgantown. Three radio stations up here, one in Fairmont, one in Morgantown, one in Kingwood, all three right-wing stations now with Mr. Limbaugh on.
Naturally.
Naturally, of course. And, you know, you hear so much about the complaint about how the left-wing the media is. Well, you wouldn't notice for the ground here. And even if you dial in the major 50,000-watt station up the road about 70 miles, KDKA is conservative as can be these net days.
Oh, yeah, KDKA is not exactly torching the airwaves from the left, no.
No.
And, of course, you know, Morgantown is right in the heart of the West Virginia radio media empire.
That's Mr. Racy's bunch, yes, indeed. And
yeah,
you can usually tell a conservative station, if it's Fox News running at the top of the hour, you can be pretty sure of it. Or as my experience this afternoon with the Kingwood station, that used to be a religious station, by the way, they were carrying the Blaze news at the top of the hour.
Oh, my God, the Blaze is doing top-of-the-hour news now on radio?
The Blaze is doing news, yes, indeed.
He must have raked in a bunch of bucks over at Fox.
They're pushing his magazine, I believe, too. Yes, apparently there is some money there from somewhere. Because they were selling it pretty hard this afternoon.
Oh, my dear God. That's the... that's going on now?
Well, I heard their news this afternoon. I believe it was 5 o'clock on WFSP out of Kingwood. Apparently they have their own news service or something similar to it, encouraging you to come to them for the truth. You know, that's where the truth is. The Blaze is the truth. So they say.
Right, right.
You know, that's just their version of fair and balanced, of course, you know.
Yeah. Are you within range that you can get U92 FM from the campus?
Yes, I'm certain I can get that. Anything in Morgantown I can pick up.
I wonder if they've been swallowed up by right-wingism.
Well, I'll tell you, everything except the public stuff seems to be getting swallowed up. That's a lot of what bothers me, is that, anything... The only two stations that seem to be doing any good in the world today are, as they tell me, the religious stations, which you can make, I guess, a ton of money off of. Most stations in my old hometown are both religious stations now, the AM and the FM both, whereas they used to be, just your normal... informative music radio stations, and that's in Grafton. The FM is now owned by this K-Love outfit, I guess, and the AM is now run by the Catholic Church. So that is where we are around here. Everything seems to be either religious or right-wing. Take your choice. And really, one's pretty much the same as the other. when you really boil it down. Right-wing is religious, and religious is right-wing usually. There's not hardly, any difference between the two.
And I don't think that's an accident, do you?
Oh, of course not. Because, it's the money running it all, and I'm afraid that as we lose more and more progressive stations, and I had very few to choose from to start with. Usually I listened on the internet to maybe perhaps Seattle or out in New Mexico. You're not going to find anything to amount like that anywhere here in West Virginia that I've seen.
Well, there was down in Huntington, that AM station run by Kindred Communications was pretty progressive for a while. I don't know what happened to them. And then there was a station up in Wheeling for a while. I don't know if it's still there.
Are you thinking of Wheeling, or there was one, I think, over about Mansfield and New Martinsville?
It was my understanding it was a Wheeling station.
Well, I'll have to go and take a look for that. Of course, for me, Wheeling, nothing really comes in here out of Wheeling except WWBA, and here we go again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tell you what, I enjoy hearing from you, Robert. Maybe we can work on your audio some a little bit. It's a little tough to get. It seems to be coming in and out, and I don't know why.
I've got another microphone. I'll try that. What I have now is I have one of these little GE cameras with the microphone built in, and that's what I'm using right now. So before I call you again, I will try to improve the situation a little bit.
Okay, sounds good. Well, it's good to hear from you.
All right, well, go on ahead and let's hear about the American Sniper. I posted my comments.
Oh, dear God. Well, yeah, you have to start by actually reading the tweets. Oh, yuck. So we'll get there. Robert, you have yourself a good night.
You do, too. Stay warm.
Going to try.
Have a good night.
All right, bye now. Robert calling from the general Morgantown area. Note coming in from Jenny in Wisconsin. This is only the second year that my daughter's had off for MLK Day. I always kept her out. We live now in Milwaukee, and they have the day off of school. We used to live in the country, and they would have an end of semester, so they would have the next Monday off or the Friday off, but would never celebrate MLK Day. I never heard so many racist slurs as I did in that town. One day when my daughter was in fourth grade, she was reading her textbook, and the book referred to black people. As she reported to me, she knew that book was old, written in 2001, so she asked the teacher, shouldn't the proper term be African Americans? And, get the hockey puck, Jenny says. The teacher, a substitute, said, well, it's better than... And you know what the word was. It's the one with an R, two G's, an E, an I, and an N that isn't ginger. Jenny says we're happy that she is now in the most integrated middle school in the second most segregated city. I noticed earlier today that one of my friends from the Wisconsin Northwoods said she kept her daughter home from school today because the school did not take the MLK day off. They did, however, have a special day on Friday where everybody took time to dress up in Packers colors. Nice. No, the American Sniper thing, God, this is sickening. I don't know if, I don't know if Clint Eastwood set out to make a movie that would inflame the right wing's passion for slaughtering people of the Muslim faith. But that is apparently what he has done. Michael Moore has seen the movie and opined upon it. Michael Moore said, And really, what is there to take issue with? Michael Moore said that he saw the film and referred to any sniper, American or any other nationality, as cowards. And he was using his own family history for the purpose of making that expression. Michael Moore tweeted, "My uncle was killed by a sniper in World War II. We were taught snipers were cowards. We'll shoot you in the back. Snipers aren't heroes, and invaders are worse." He continued, "But if you're on the roof of your home defending it from invaders who've come 7,000 miles, you're not a sniper. You're brave. You're a neighbor." You can imagine this got the right wing in a state of high dudgeon. Professor Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, tweeted, "Michael Moore should spend a few weeks with ISIS and Boko Haram. Then he might appreciate that American sniper. I am proud of our defenders." Where are we getting into the in Iraq? Can anybody tell me? And, of course, Sean Hannity got himself all worked up. "Hey, Michael, when snipers like Chris Kyle are saving American lives, be a good, even an idiot like you can get that." S.E. Cup says it's sheer nonsense. Jonah Goldberg. "People, please ignore Michael Moore. He's been trolling since before the term was coined. This is the same guy who thought O.J. was innocent." And then there's Eric Bowling. "Michael Moore calling sniper a coward? Wow. That's the fat pot calling the hero kettle black." And then Michael Moore pointed out that, as is often the case, the right wing, the right wing has hissies about things that they imagine inside thin gray settlings that pass for brains and serve as a sort of insulative fluid around their big old amygdalas. "Hmm," he says, "I never tweeted one word about American sniper Chris, by the sniper cards would do them. Others." But it gets worse. Of course it gets worse. Because the average, everyday, ordinary, sleazy, slimy, filthy, nasty, right-wing, bloodthirsty bigots and right-wingers jumped into the discussion. To wit. And this is just nasty. And like I said, I don't know if Clint Eastwood set out to inflame people into a homicidal rage against Muslims, but it is how it has worked out. This is sickening. It is disgusting. And it is entirely predictable. Oh, mercy. Ragan Brock, R-A-G-A-N, who knows? Said, "Teared up at the end of American Sniper. Great fucking movie. and now I really want to kill some fucking ragheads. American Sniper makes me want to go shoot some fucking Arabs. That's Des Harmon. Real Deal at Harsh New Yorker. Nice to see a movie where the Arabs are portrayed for who they really are. Vermin scum intent on destroying us. Vermin scum. Hashtag de Blasio. That's kind of interesting. American Sniper made me appreciate soldiers 100x more and hate Muslims 1 million x more. Just out of curiosity, why were they trying to kill us? Oh, wait! Because we invaded their country. So by the logic that the right wing uses, if somebody invaded us, I guess the right wingers would just turn all Vichy and go and bust out all collaborator. Then again, they get all sexy time over Vladimir Putin. So is anybody surprised? And then there's this. In Texas, Muslims there put on a conference. Their conference was titled Stand with the Prophet Against Terror and Hate. Naturally, the white wing showed up. They carried signs, these patriotic Americans did. Never mind the fact that the Muslims were also patriotic Americans. You are not Americans! Don't fly our flag! The space that they were holding the conference in had been rented out from the Garland Independent School District, And they got all pissed off about that. LaVonna Martindale said, "We pay our taxes to that school, and I don't want them here. We're here to stand up for the American way of life from a faction of people who are trying to destroy us." Did I miss the big Muslim invasion on the Atlantic beachhead or something? No, they're coming across the dried out part of the Rio Grande River. If they want to live their life like the Middle East, they can go back to the Middle East! I want for people... Oh, Jesus. Paige Spence showed up to the meeting. Paige Spence said, "I want for people to see that we are kind and peaceful people. We're not here to fight. We're not here to argue. We're just here to show that we're Americans, too." Young woman said, "People are here to stand up with the prophet against hate and intolerance." You're not Americans! Let's check in with NBC5 DFW, shall we? Why not? Maybe we can hear some real live teabaggers. Texas American patriots, such as.
Pity sakes. Started hours before the event and continued right up until it finished. NBC5's Catherine Ross joins us live. So, Catherine, were there any serious problems tonight?
Well, Kevin and Amanda, that's still what we're watching. The conference is wrapping up right now, but there are still people who are upset that it even happened at all. So tonight we are watching, but we know for the most part their passion was mostly confined just to words.
You're not welcome here.
On both sides of the street.
Yeah, this is where the Joker, and I saw it, Carol Baker posted, who wanted a Sharia free zone. That's Shria. Teabagger spelling. It's a beautiful thing.
And counter-protest.
We're here to stand up for the American way of life from a faction of people that are trying to destroy it.
No, I'm just here to show that this is my country, too, and that we love it.
One group, hundreds strong, waving flags, leading rallies, and greeting people coming to tonight's conference on Islam with their message. They're upset an event called Stand with the Prophet is happening at a Garland ISD building.
I particularly love the sign, Stand with Jesus!
Pay our taxes to that school, and I don't want them here.
There's Lavana.
Stand up with the Prophet against hate and against intolerance.
And the right of free speech.
Inside, they were waving American flags, too.
Thank you. Thank you, America.
Thankful for the extra Garland police presence. On the street, a few clashes, but it never turned physical. The friction tonight, not over the First Amendment, but the message in hand.
I want for people to see that we are kind, peaceful people. We're not here to fight. We're not here to argue. We're just here to show that we're American.
See, that's the thing these poor people don't understand, is that the First Amendment does not apply to them because they are not Christians. Do people think that it's a joke when we talk about the reality that the First Amendment is nothing more than a life support system for the Christian religion industry? Because it's not. It's not. Don't fly our flag. Here, by the way, I mentioned, and we'll end this way, I mentioned earlier, and a reminder, we got $40 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thanks, everybody. So hopefully that'll happen, 4 at 10, 2 at 20. 8 at 5, 5 at 8, 10 at 4, whatever. The only quote, and Cowboy Dickhead, or whatever his name was, Cowboy Bill, he proved me right, because the only Dr. King quote is the white racists know is the content of his character line. So let's try on, as courtesy of Raw Story, let's try on as we go to the end of the program. Let's all mark their quotes, you will not serve it, in face pages today. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village, but we realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor. Then from Advice for Living, this almost lunatic fringe of modern child care has been responsible for most strange and fantastic methods of child rearing in many American homes. The child is permitted to almost terrorize the home for fear of having its individuality repressed. Somewhere along the way, every child must be trained into the obligations of cooperative living. In the eulogy for the children murdered in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing, Dr. King said, "They have something to say," meaning the children who were murdered by white people. "They have something to say, every politician who has fed his constituent. They have something to say to every politician who has fed his constituents with the stale bread of hatred and the spoiled meat of racism. They have something to say to a federal government that has compromised with the undemocratic practices of Southern Dixiecrats and the blatant hypocrisy of right-wing Northern Republicans." Then there's this, and whoa, you know, now see... This is the Dr. King that K cowboy asshat or whatever, the cowboy, wild cowboy doof, I don't know. This, he don't want nothing to do with this Martin Luther King because he's a teabagger. Organized labor has proved to be one of the most powerful forces in removing the blight of segregation and discrimination from our nation. Yeah. Letter to Harry Truman. It is a sad day for our country when men come to feel that oppressed people cannot desire freedom and human dignity unless they are motivated by communism. Because, of course, that was a biggie for the white wingers. That Martin Luther King, he's a commie. Freedom only comes through persistent revolt, through persistent agitation, through persistently rising up against the system of evil. And how about this? Being as how we know now that the Supreme Court will take up the issue in this term of marriage equality. Marriage is at bottom a mutual agreement between two individuals. One always has the freedom to say yes or no to the agreement. You'll note that he doesn't say marriage is at bottom a mutual agreement between one man and one woman, or a man and a woman, or... No. Marriage is a mutual agreement between two individuals. Yep. I'm pretty sure the teabaggers won't want that Dr. King either. So it's time to get out of here. Thank you, the one and all, for joining in on this Moran Monday. I told you we were going to be busy. Yeesh. And we were. And for Titanic Tuesday, a little teaser. Do you remember Holly Hobby Lobby? I got a tweet here from Isaac about it, and I'd seen it on the Facebook page via Tim, too. Yeah, maybe we'll talk about Holly Hobby Lobby a little bit. Thanks to everybody who helped us reach the fundraising goal this evening. We are not quite there, but we're getting there. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben is responsible for every packet that passes of these streams. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACAC, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.